podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Edwards goes to Standall. Now it's Bennett. JPR, the fullback, is he going to get his second try? Oh, what a killer blow for the Welshman. JPR Williams, the fullback, scores the try that must sew it up for Wales.
Welcome to another episode of the Attacking Scrum Podcast. Thanks very much indeed for downloading. It's just me on this episode, and I'll explain why in a minute. But yeah, as always, this takes a lot more energy to do it on your own. It's so much harder. So bear with me. Hope you'll enjoy it. And as much as anything, I really want to get your thoughts from you this week as well. So just by way of a bit of an update, been lots going on in my life personally. So I've been running my own business for like 6 years, and have come into the end of that journey now. So been a lot going on with the business and stuff, which has meant just got a lot less time to A, watch rugby, and B, to book guests and things like that. It's also been a bit tricky in the last kind of season or so, having no Murph, no Dan, no Yestin. So the regular co-hosts, if you like, who've all had other commitments, either work or personal, that's just meant they're not able to commit time to the pod at the moment. We haven't all fallen out. It's not like the end of the Smiths and I'm Morrissey or anything like that. We're all still in regular contact with each other, and I really hope that that we'll have the guys back on soon as well. But what it's meant is I'm kind of planning a bit of a relaunch for the podcast. So it gives a bit of time to get planning and figure out what you want it to sound like, really. And that's what I'd love to hear from you about, is, you know, what you would like to hear more of. Do you want more interview content? Do you want regular contributors? Do you want to hear more from things like press conferences? I would love to get, you know, some kind of young aspiring journalists involved, you know, if they're at university in Cardiff or Swansea or wherever, that would be able to kind of act as reporters in the grounds for us and things like that. So I'd love to, you know, to take what we've built over the last however long it's been, 8 or 9 years, and turn it into really kind of evolve it and grow it. So let us know what you would like to hear more of. You can drop me a note on Twitter if you follow us on there. If you don't, I have got an email account that I very rarely check, but I promise I will go and have a look at it. And that's Jed with a G, G-E-D, at attackingscrum.co.uk. So let us know which bits of the show you like. Do you want, are there any old bits that you would want to bring back, you know, fact or fiction and sin bin and all these old features we used to do? Or if there's something completely new, let us know, and I'll, at the very least, if it's a great idea, I'll at the very least give you a shout out about it. So I think it's an exciting time for the pods. Looking forward to getting a bit more headspace and turning it into something that that everyone will really enjoy. So I guess a bit of a rebirth is on the cards, and very excited to bring that to you soon. But yeah, in the moment, everything just kind of in the planning stage. So it's a great time for you to get in touch and let us know what you want to hear more of. And hopefully it's not episodes of me on my own, because they're really, really hard to do. But that said, we have got plenty to talk about. We have got the Ospreys winning their crucial quarter-final against Sale to book a place against Gloucester this weekend, which is really, really exciting. We're going to dive into that. We've got some transfer news. We've also got the news that Wales Autumn Internationals are set to move behind a paywall. And there was also a really interesting article that Brian Moore wrote in this week's today's Telegraph, about proposing the removal of tactical substitutions and almost taking it back to the old days where it was just injury substitution. So I want to talk about that a bit as well. So all of that is coming up on this episode of the show. And I think there's no better place to start than with the Ospreys. So, I mean, it's a genuine good news story, which we've not had many of those of late. And I think first off, you've got to give so much credit to Toby Booth. I know we've said this on here time and time again, but the guy has just, you know, has worked wonders the last couple of seasons. And it's kind of easy to forget, in amongst all the madness that's been going on that there was a great cup run in Europe last year in the, you know, in the main high, or the Champions Cup as it now is, and to back that up with, you know, with a semi-final now in the Challenge Cup, and hopefully the opportunity to go further, still fighting for a place in the playoffs in the league amidst all the all the injuries they've had. You forget the likes of, you know, the likes of Jack Morgan and Derry Lake are out, and you've also got, you know, some of these really bright young talents, people like Fender who had a really good start to the season, have been missing for a while through injury. So to kind of battle through all of that, which I know all the regions have had to struggle with, but doing that, being kind of constantly competitive, and then putting together a great cup run in Europe is, I think, is testament to what Toby Booth has built. And you know, he's been able to build that over the last few years. So one of the kind of defining characteristics, I think, of the Ospreys is just that refusal to give in. And I think we really saw that in the first kind of 10 minutes of the game, first 10 or 15 minutes of the game, when Sale spent a lot of time in Ospreys territory. There was lots of driving line outs. There was the Tipperick holding the ball up over the line, which again was absolutely crucial. A few times when Sale had penalties that they went to the corner and looked for the kill, and the Ospreys were able to dig in, really kind of dogged dour defence. And it looked as though they were kind of getting overpowered. But when it came to it, they kind of took advantage of what they were able to do at scrum time, which led to penalties and territory. So I think it was just that character in the first 10, 15 minutes of the game that was really impressive to dig in really deep. And likewise, in the final 5, 10 minutes, when things could have got very, very nervy, having established a big lead, they didn't panic. And when they got the opportunity, you know, to kick that penalty to do it, again, they did it, and did it in a way that was, you know, relatively unfussy. You know, it wasn't the best night off the tee for Owen Williams. I think he had a mixed game, showed some brilliant touches, you know, the handling skills to set up. Keelan Giles for his try was really, really nice. There were some other good touches in there, some good tactical kicks, but then there was also some missed kicks off the tee and putting the ball out on the full and things like that. But again, you know, that kick, admittedly a straightforward one to clinch the win, but he took it, and that's all you can ask. And yeah, I think it was just, you know, really, really mature performance to not panic and to not not allow Sale back into the game. You know, once they established a bit of a foothold, Ospreys were able to, yeah, were able to get them what they needed to get it done. So that was a big big win, big performance. Question now is, can they back it up in the semis? And you know, I think it's a really exciting draw. They obviously, I think they would have loved another home draw, and that would have been against Cast. But to go to Gloucester, that's a game that's spicy. We're always saying we want Anglo-Welsh derbies. We've had one here. Admittedly, perhaps not the best crowd we would have wanted. We'll talk about that again in a minute. But they've got the job done there against Sale. Now, Gloucester is one that's a real tie that, you know, that kind of, with it being so close to Wales, it's a proper kind of derby feel to it. And so for that in the semis, I think that'll be great. It's a brilliant place to watch and for the players to play rugby, Kingsham. So I think that's that's got to be exciting for them. And, you know, look, I think if they've shown anything this season, it's that they don't get blown away by sides, or very, very rarely. Gloucester are very, very powerful. They looked good against Cast, particularly Max Llewellyn, from a Welsh perspective, was very interesting and exciting to watch. But I think the Ospreys have shown they can cope with that. They are a physical side, and even when Sale were looking a bit more of the dominant side, they were able to disrupt in other ways. The breakdown, you know, Deaves, Tipperick, Morgan Morris, all absolutely imperious there. They managed to disrupt ball, win penalties, slow things down. That kept the Ospreys in the game, and then led to dominance at the end of the first half and the start of the second. And then you've got things like the line out as well, which if Sale were allowed their own way, that would have made for a very, very difficult evening. Crucial steals, chucking Tipperick up at the front to disrupt. Adam Beard in defensive duty, again, you know, did a big performance there. So all of that would make you think that they've got what it takes to give Gloucester a really, really good game. And hopefully that'll be the case. So, yeah, you know, massive hats off to them. If I'm honest, I didn't really see at the start of this season that there'd be any Welsh involvement this late in any competition. I just thought it was going to be too big an ask with all of the off the field shenanigans and the, you know, the smaller playing squads and everything like that. don't get me wrong, I think it's going to be tougher for the Ospreys next season because, you know, they'll have another reduced playing budget to play with, and we'll have players leaving as well. But again, some of the talent coming through is really, really impressive. And I mentioned Deeves there already. He was great. Having players like Morgan Morse come off the bench, the young hooker was fantastic as well. So as difficult as it's going to be next season, you've got to take your hats off and say what a brilliant performance up to this point. So yeah, huge, hugely exciting for them, and hopefully it's a good game and they can take Gloucester all the way in that semi-final. So that's the good stuff. As always with Welsh rugby, there's some bad news and parochialism that goes with it. So watching the game on the telly, the atmosphere sounded great. It sounded really, really good. And for some reason, whoever the host broadcaster was, whether it was, I don't suppose it was S4C, I imagine it was a kind of third party, concentrated on the fans all the time. It was like watching a night out at Wetherspoons at certain points. But the atmosphere came across on the telly as being really, really positive. That said, the official figure seems to be just north of 4,000, which isn't, you know, which isn't what they would have wanted for a knockout game of rugby in Europe. Admittedly, the second tier of Europe, but against English opposition, again, admittedly Sale, not Gloucester or Bath or anyone like that. But I think, you know, I'm sure that the Ospreys commercial team would have wanted more than that within there. It's worth noting it's a crap kickoff time, 8 p.m. on a Saturday, and it's hammering it down. It's not, you know, that's not amazing. I think, you know, you look at that decline in over the years, it's easy to compare this to, you know, the Ospreys having 18,000-19,000 against the likes of Leicester in cup runs and whatever they would have done in the European games as well. But when there's been so much uncertainty hanging over the head of the Ospreys in recent times, you know, you would hope that if there's a bit more security going forward, that you can build on these performances and get better attendances. And, you know, I'm always bemoaning the fact that there's a lack of meaningful games for the regions. There's lots of fixtures that just don't mean anything to fans. I don't think this one can fall into that category because it is a European knockout game. And this is the first time that the Ospreys have made it into a semi-final of a European game. So, yeah, I wouldn't be panicking about it. But wherever they play going forward, whether it's the Brewery Field, St Helens, something purpose-built, which I don't imagine will happen, or the Knoll, I don't. You know, the answer isn't the Liberty, and the answer isn't a place that they don't own. They've got to have a way of making money away from match days, and the CEO has come out and said that. And, you know, you just, it makes you so vulnerable when you don't own your stadium and you're basically paying a rent on it and renting it out every week. So I hope there is an answer around there. Yeah, you look back to Christmas and the Brewery Field sold out at 8,000 or just north of it for the Cardiff game. I think if you have that kind of security of knowing you're going to, I'm not saying it is necessarily the Brewery Field is the answer, but if you were to play there and you knew that you're going to be playing there, it becomes a lot easier to do things like running regular coach services from Swansea in and out of there, and you hope that the kickoff times aren't always as unattractive as that. So I know that they will be working hard to get it right and announce what that stadium's going to be and how it's going to be refurbed and you know, bought, because the current options, St Helens, the Knoll, Brewery Field, none of them are up to scratch in terms of the other facilities you would need around professional, you know, modern professional rugby. But if you have the security and you know that there's going to be a team playing out of there and what competition they're going to be playing in and all of those kind of things, it makes it a lot easier. So I think it's absolutely crucial they get that right. But one thing is for sure, it sounded a lot better than kind of rattling around the Liberty. But I know, obviously, there are people who live in Swansea and go to the games, which I don't, and they'll have their say because they're season ticket holders as well. So I just hope that they find an answer that works for everyone or works for the club in the long term on that one. But yeah, in the meantime, it's been a great performance, and it's just great to watch a Welsh side winning games of rugby and kind of big games of rugby too. So well done to all the players, well done to Toby Booth and the coaching staff, Mark James and everyone else. It's yeah, absolutely cracking performance, and hopefully they can back it up. Right, here's the first of one of a couple of breaks this evening. I'm going to have a sharp intake of breath, a drink, either water or something stiffer, and then come back and we'll have a chat about some transfer news. So that's going to come up after this short break. So time then for some transfer news in the second part of this show, and a lot of it is orientated around the Dragons this week. So it was announced today that, well, two bits of news today. Firstly, Gonzalo Bertrano, the Argentinian international scrum half, he's set to head down the M4 to Cardiff on a loan deal. Obviously, they need a bit of backup with Thomas Williams being out injured. Bertrand, who just seems kind of very much out of favour, I think, you know, according to the Dragons website, he's only played two games all season, one start. And obviously, coming back from the World Cup, they'd have been managing that as well. But it looks very much like he's not in the plans going forward. So that adventure from Mendoza to Malpas is going to take on a new look for next season. I mean, to be honest, like looking back, I think he's obviously a player who's got some class, but I don't think he's ever fulfilled his potential in a Dragons shirt. I think it's tended to be fits and starts. Some games has been great and he's shown what he's capable of. I think his best games really have come in the blue and white of Argentina rather than the black of the Dragons. It doesn't help, you know, when your pack is often having a tough time and you're on the back foot, but I don't know, an experienced international, that's kind of what you want. You know, that's really where you want players to dig in. And I don't know, for me, this is just my opinion, others may well differ, I just don't feel like it was ever, he never kind of strung together a run of games that really made that nine shirt his own, and has tended to kind of be in and out of there with Roddy Williams during the time that he's been here. So yeah, it's personally, I don't think it's been, you know, it's been the most spectacular of signings, and it makes sense because clearly it doesn't seem like he's going to feature too much in the future, so it makes sense for him to go and put in a shift for Cardiff as well. And you know, I'd imagine in the future with having Roger Williams and Dane Blacker there already, plus some really highly rated youngsters, so that kind of brings us on to the whole host of youngsters who the Dragons have given new contracts to. So some really bright talent in there. You've got the likes of Ewan Rosser, who is a player who's played quite a bit this season, you know, would be in and around that first team most of the time. So Ewan Rosser, I think, you know, he's done really, really well and been rewarded with a new contract. And then you've got a couple of bright scrum halves in Shea Hope and Morgan Lloyd, both of which are, you know, kind of really big talents. So you hope that the one or two, both of them, are able to kick on, get some game time and show that they're ready for first team rugby. We know that it's going to be, you know, it's been tough for the Dragons for a very long period of time, but with the finances being how they are, we know that we're reliant on young talent. And if there's one thing that the Dragons have been able to do, it's to bring through some young talent. So again, you hope that these players, they'll definitely get an opportunity, and you hope that they're able to step up to it, and it isn't too much, you know, there aren't too many of those bloodbath performances that we've seen in recent months. But there's no doubt in that there's real prospects in there. You know, looking the centres, again, two really bright centres playing for the under-20s. You've got new contracts as well in Harry Ackerman and Joe Westwood. They're both hugely highly rated. Some more pace out wide in Ollie Andrew. So you've got, you know, exciting players. It's just, you know, I guess there's always been exciting players knocking around the squad. You just hope that we're able to develop and nurture them so that they're battle hardened pretty quickly, and they're going to have to be, because there's not likely to be huge influxes of senior experienced players coming into the region. And then the other one is Ryan Woodman, who got quite a lot of rugby at the start of this season. He's hugely rated, quite rightly as well. You know, looks to have everything that you want in a gritty back five forward, and yeah, just, you know, as Mr. Chunker this season through injury as well, but it's good to see him get rewarded. So all of that, you know, makes for good news. It's just that you hope that around it, very similar story to the Wales setup, really. You hope that around it, you're able to find the right level of experience to keep you in games, both physically and mentally, and kind of keep you competitive. But nonetheless, it's good to see those players get new contracts, and hopefully they'll go on to prove what quality players that they are. Now, yeah, someone who signed a contract a long, long time ago, and he's still only 29, but is hanging up his boots, is Jack Dixon. So, yeah, the youngest player to ever play regional rugby, aged 16. At the time he was, anyway, aged just 16 at the time. And, it seems like he's been around forever, because he has been around for a very long period of time. 13 years later, was still playing rugby. I mean, absolute stalwart for the Dragons. I've always loved watching him play, because he's just a player who gives absolutely everything. So physical, puts his body on the line all the time. And he's definitely one of those players that you felt for last season when all of the contract talks was going on. And I think it was a post-match interview with Steph Hughes who mentioned that, Jack Dixon had a horrendous ankle injury and he's a player whose contract was running out. And for him to not know whether he had a future or not is really, really tough. And, we've spoken to a few players this season. We spoke to Sam Davis at the end of last season, spoke to Jared Evans at the start of this season about how tough it was to try and plan for the future when you don't know if there's going to be a contract there for you. And so, for him to put in all that effort amongst all that backdrop, I think is is testament to what he was as a pro, and God wishing the best for the future. I think he's still got time to run on his contract, and the BBC seem to be stating that it's not an injury-related retirement. So it's an interesting one, but I mean, if he has just kind of decided enough is enough and wants to go and retrain and get a, look at what that career looks like after rugby, then that makes perfect sense. He's played a hell of a lot of rugby and put a hell of a lot through. So, and it's been a really interesting career as well. Obviously, it hasn't been littered with silverware, which is what happens when you play for the Dragons. But some interesting things of note, as I say, that to have had that mantle as the youngest player to play regional rugby. If memory serves, it was either him or I think he might have had that taken away from him by Hallam Amos like the following week or something, or the other way around. But nonetheless, it kind of showed the faith everyone had in him, and to then go on and play 13 more years is really impressive. And as an under 20, was part of that side, the first ever side to beat the Baby Blacks in the under 20s World Championships as well. So, some really interesting things on the CV. And again, I think you'd be hard pushed to find many Dragons fans who wouldn't say he ever gave anything less than 100%. So yeah, best of luck to Jack Dixon. It's shame to see him go. Now, while we're talking transfers, it looks as though Regan Grace, the former St Helens Rugby League and Wales Rugby League international, is staying with Bath. So if you haven't, if you've never seen him play rugby league, it's definitely worth having a YouTube and having a look at some of his amazing tries. Just an absolute brilliant athlete, wonderfully balanced runner, really smart finisher, and a brilliant player at rugby league. Made a high profile move to Racing 92 and then suffered a ruptured Achilles. I think I'm right in saying he then either ruptured the same one or the one on his other ankle while in the rehab process. So he's had an awful run of luck with injury. That meant he never turned out for Racing 92, didn't play for them. Bath picked him up on a short-term contract, and I think he's really impressed them in terms of his attitude and training. And then he played in that game against Gloucester, a friendly during the Six Nations as well. So it looks as though he's going to stay with them in the meantime, which is really encouraging. You don't want to pin too much hope on him in terms of the Welsh national side, but you do just want to see exciting Welsh players get an opportunity to play wherever that is. So he would be eligible to play for Wales because he's never played in Wales and hasn't been capped. So in the short term, that would be an opportunity if he's able to get some rugby and stay fit and everything, and prove that he's good enough to do it at that level. But he's certainly an exciting prospect and someone who at 27 has still got plenty more rugby to come. So, yeah, again, if you're ever, if you're bored, either ideally you're bored at work rather than bored listening to this podcast. But, yeah, when you get a chance, check out some of his tries from rugby league because, yeah, he's a really exciting athlete to watch. So, yeah, fingers crossed he gets a good run when it comes to the 15 man version of the game, but yeah, good news that he's picked up a contract with Bath. Now, outside of the world of transfers, this is something we've discussed on the podcast a number of times in terms of the broadcast deals that that get put into place, and particularly when it comes to Wales internationals. So it was announced this week, in fact, maybe even today as I record this, everything seems like a bit of a blur really, but it was announced that the Autumn Internationals are now going to move behind a paywall, and it's TNT Sport, so formerly known as BT, who are going to pick that up, which is, you know, has naturally prompted a large amount of people to say, well, hang on a minute, this is the Welsh national side, I should be able to watch this, why have I got to have another subscription? Other people who, I guess, you know, are more forgiving or more understanding that this is professional sport will say, well, it's a financial decision. You've got to put the games where who are prepared on the station and the broadcasters who are prepared to pay for it. TNT are kind of coming very much back into bidding for things now. You know, they had a period of consolidation when a few years ago, after the initial boom of BT Sport, as was spending loads of money on rights from everything from Premiership rugby to Premier League football to women's tennis and all that kind of stuff that went with it. There was naturally a kind of a consolidation of that when their senior management decided that actually sport wasn't the right route to selling broadband subscriptions. Subsequently, BT Sport has been sold to Discovery and then rebranded as TNT Sport. So they are kind of on the lookout for the right properties for them. Now, in terms of how this will work, I think the fact that it's on a station that already has a large amount of rugby is probably a good thing. It's come away from Amazon. That's where they were shown before. That was the deal that was first struck up during COVID and proved to be vitally important for the survival of the unions, kind of at a time when they didn't have revenue coming through the gates through paid ticketers. So that was a really important deal. It seemed to kind of work in the short term for Amazon in that they had, you know, it was a really good kind of timing for them to push their Christmas offering. So if they can get more people to subscribe to Amazon Prime for sporting reasons, there's more opportunity for them to sell stuff, you know, whatever it is, to sell Christmas presents and everything else and just to get people to do more of their shopping through Amazon. They've decided that's not the right route and TNT have come through and picked it up. So the good thing is that, you know, they have heritage in rugby. A lot of people will have will have TNT as a result of BT subscriptions, having the Champions Cup rights, having the Premiership Rugby rights. So it is kind of good from that perspective because it means they're able to kind of market it, and it's, you know, it's kind of one, I suppose it's one less subscription if you look at it that way. In order to have it, you can cancel your Amazon subscription in order to, you know, if you had one, in order to move over to TNT if you didn't have it already. So I guess that's the, you know, that's the pros. The other big pro is that, you know, it's presumably an enhanced financial deal, which is what you know, is what all the unions need, is what the WRU need. We know of the shortage of money that's there. And I suppose the other thing to say is that it's not the Six Nations at the moment. You know, that will no doubt be revisited. There will definitely be paid broadcasters looming if they're able to get their hands on it. And that happens, you know, that happens every time those rights come up for renewal. And the Autumn Internationals, as much as we love watching Wales, is not the same as the Six Nations in terms of that history and heritage and everything else. So if it has to be one of them, I would rather it be the Autumn Internationals than be the Six Nations. That said, I've said on here a number of times that there is a danger that if you just chase the short-term cash, you lose the visibility that free-to-air television brings you. So naturally audiences are smaller on pay TV because it's a barrier to entry. There will be people who go, oh bugger it, I can't be bothered, I'm not buying it, or I haven't got it, I'm not going to watch it. So as a result, naturally audiences, even on the biggest sporting properties, are smaller on subscription TV than they would be on free-to-air television. So what you're essentially losing is, it's kind of like moving, I guess the equivalent analogy would be, it's like moving your shop from the high street where there's loads of footfall over to a retail park, or a tiny village where there's nothing else. You know that you're just not going to have that same level of casual fan, or those viewers who are going to come in and see it on the off chance. So that's potentially damaging to the sport in two ways. One is just the overall general visibility of rugby, which has definitely waned amongst certain audiences, particularly younger audiences. Rugby is not the pull that it once was, and the danger of putting stuff on a paywall channel like TNT Sports is you're only catering to the hardcore rugby enthusiasts. So, I've got TNT because I wanted to watch European rugby, so I'll watch it. That's great. But what about those people who only watch, maybe 10 games of rugby a year? Now, it's very easy to say, oh, well, they're only fair weather fans. And maybe they are, but they still bring eyeballs and money to the sport, which we need them to do. So, whatever you're doing commercially and marketing, it's always about attracting new people. Whether you're selling tickets to rugby games or you're trying to grow the sport through getting people to watch it, you're trying to grow advertising revenue by having more people watching it, you're trying to grow sponsorship revenue by having more people watch it, paywall is always a harder thing to do. So it's by no means perfect. I'd be lying if I said I didn't see this coming. It's not been on free-to-air television consistently for a very long time, and I don't see that changing in the short term. But in isolation, it probably works in the short term, but there has to be a big plan about how to get people, particularly in Wales, how to get people re-engaged with rugby again, especially when the national side is suffering wooden spoons and whitewashes in the Six Nations. So there has to be a way that the WRU really gets the public re-engaged with rugby. When the national side is underperforming like that, when the internationals are hidden behind paywalls, when the regional sides are generally having a pretty tough time and competing in my opinion, a league that just doesn't attract the casual club rugby fan in Wales. They've got to look at ways to broaden the appeal. So, yeah, I think this is something that we're going to constantly revisit, and I'm sure we'll revisit on this podcast as things go on as well. But yeah, that is the news, that Wales internationals will be moving to a paywall on TNT for the autumn. So yeah, you'll have to either have to fork out or find someone who's got a subscription, or better still, watch it down the rugby club or however you're going to do it. So yeah, that'll be coming up as of the autumn. Coming up now is another quick break, and when we come back, I am going to be taking a look at the article that Brian Moore has written in this week's Telegraph about tactical substitutions, tactical replacements. So that will be coming up. But first, very quick break. Need to complete your bird. Need to complete your bird. Right, into the final part of the show for this week. And again, a reminder as to what I mentioned right at the start of the show. Let us know what you want us to do with the pod. I'd love to hear from you. Love to hear your suggestions as to how we can evolve it and go forward and make it the podcast that you want to listen to. So let us know if you've got any suggestions or thoughts. And you can do that either on Twitter, or you can do it by sending me an email, jed@attackingscrum.co.uk. Just Jed with a G @attackingscrum.co.uk. Would love to hear those suggestions from you. But for the final part of the show, I wanted to talk about an article that Brian Moore has written in today's Telegraph, in which he proposes removing tactical substitutions. And this has basically come off the back of not just results this weekend, but the growing trend of seeing 6-2 splits on the bench, and the ability for really big physical dominant sides to then unleash essentially almost another pack of forwards after you know, after 50-55 minutes, and what that does to the game. So it's a really interesting one, because naturally a lot of people have pushed back and said, well, hang on, player safety is of paramount importance. And I absolutely agree on that. Of course it is. You know, we've spoken numerous times about head collisions. I'm a big advocate of wanting to see stricter policing around head contact, or certainly more consistent policing around it, and the management of head contact during training sessions and everything else. But in a way, I do kind of think that the power game probably is more, you know, and this is just my opinion, there's, you know, this is not, there's no detailed scientific research gone into this, but I just think that where the game has gone, and you've got an over-reliance on winning the collision being essentially how you win games of rugby. You win the collision, more often than not, you will win the game. And that, as a result, means that you have a much bigger emphasis on power. So if you have a big pack of forwards, you're then able to bring on another 5 or 6 of them and really kind of and really turn the screw on your opposition. South Africa have done this to great effect. We saw the likes of Bordeaux do it this weekend. French sides generally doing it. The French national side have looked to do it in recent times as well. Now, I think the really important thing with this is that, you know, if you're saying that, if you're saying this kind of needs to be looked at, well, why does it need to be looked at? I think there is an element that if you have less emphasis on power and less emphasis on collision, there is going to be more opportunity, you know, more emphasis placed on skill. And as a result, you will end up with hopefully less collisions and less, you know, less impact, which is something I think, you know, all the players could kind of do with. It's not to say, you know, you don't want a physical game. Of course you do. That's what rugby's all about. But I just think that there has become, you know, an increasing trend over the past decade where it is just about collision, and that being the primary important thing when it comes to rugby. I think what it would change if you weren't able to do that, and you weren't able to bring on loads and loads of replacements, is it does mean that, you know, I guess you can't have a 22-23 stone prop and just have him empty the tank for 40 minutes and be really disruptive at scrums and smash into carries and smash into rucks and empty the tank. You've got to have, you know, a bit of an all round game. Conversely, I don't, you know, we do still want rugby to be a game for all shapes and sizes. I think, to be honest, there are probably more people of different shapes and sizes missing while the game gets more and more physical. I think, you know, you get less and less of those kind of Shane Williams, Cheslin Colby type players able to really kind of thrive in the game while there's such an emphasis placed on the physicality. So I think that is something that would change. Obviously, you know, you're going to end up with a bigger emphasis placed on fitness if players had to go the full 80. I think, to be honest, you know, the other thing is, how do you police it? You know, how do you describe what's an injury or not? And I think, to be honest, the article has probably been written with that headline designed to attract clicks and designed to kind of bring some kind of debate around it. I would be quite happy just to see less tactical substitutions. You know, I don't know how you would police it, but even just less substitutions generally, I think would be a better thing in terms of the long term move away from the power game. And I think that in turn can make the game a lot safer if it's done in the right way. And I don't have all the answers to this, but I think that that's where I do see there being a solution. And alongside that, you know, we were mentioning in the previous part of the show about growing the game. And a big thing for me when it comes to watching sport is knowing who's going to win. And I think if you know who's going to win a game because they've got the biggest set of forwards and another 6 big forwards to bring on, it just makes it a lot less exciting. And in terms of attracting new nations and clubs to play the sport, it becomes more and more difficult to do that. So Brian Moore offers the example in his article of Portugal. You know, they might have a pack of forwards who can compete on their day with a Wales or a Fiji or in England or anyone, but asking them to go and then find another 6 who are of that same calibre is such a big ask that it's way more prohibitive to the smaller rugby nations and with the smaller player pools, and I include Wales in that, than it is to those bigger ones. And if you translate that to the club game, the clubs with more money, you know, predominantly the French sides and those in you know, I suppose you could say in Japan, formerly in England, less so now. But if you've got more money, you can buy, you know, essentially what Murph would refer to as meat. You know, you can bring on huge second rows to come on and just and really close out the game from a physical perspective. And again, I just don't think that's the best thing in terms of growing the game. I think the English Premiership as a product has really benefited from the fact that it's a lot more equal in recent times. You know, you can watch a lot of games and you still don't know who's going to win it. And, you know, on certain weeks, some sides can get blown away and then come back the next week and win. And I think that's been a result of it sounds weird to say it, but with less money getting spent on players and there being reduced salaries, it has made for a more competitive product in the end. Obviously, we don't have that in the URC because you have, there's no salary cap there whatsoever. So, you know, sides like Leinster, and this is no slight on Leinster, because again, they're actually a side that they play some really attractive rugby alongside the nuts and bolts of the physical stuff that they do. But they are able to field, second and third string sides that are, stronger than the Welsh region's first choice sides, really. So I don't know. For me, I think rugby has just got something to look at in terms of making it a sport that just doesn't become a monopoly, and that's what I really hope we're able to see, because it's not, I don't know, that perhaps that's what's made the URC more interesting in recent times, is that the South African sides have bought competition to compete with the Leinsters and Munsters of this world, because the Welsh sides just can't do it. But I don't, you know, in the long run, I don't see that as being the right solution for the Welsh sides. But something like this would be a really interesting thing, I think, for the game on the whole. But it all comes down to whether you've got the power brokers within the game who are prepared to put this forward. I'm not sure that's necessarily the case. I think where you have major tournaments like the Six Nations that are run by unions, naturally your instinct is going to be to look out for yourself, and that's what you're kind of there to do. Hence, you see the likes of kind of Georgia being frozen out and everything like that. But I don't know, we say this so often, but there has to be a point where if rugby wants to survive, it stops being so self-serving and you have to look at the bigger picture. And that includes how you grow the game in other countries. You know, the Portugal opportunity, and it's not just Portugal, it's Chile, it's Uruguay, these sides who overachieved at the World Cup, A, they don't get an opportunity to come and play much against Tier 1 opposition in those intervening 4 years. And World Rugby is essentially asking them to then come back in 4 years and provide the level of entertainment that they have, but without offering that leg up from the other nations. And again, something like this, again, I just think makes it much harder for a side like that to do, to go and be able to establish a massive squad that's able to compete. I just think is too difficult. And things like this would make the game. Would give teams a fairer chance, I think. And, you know, ultimately, the cream will always rise to the top. I think you could do this, and I think Leinster would still be dominant. I think Ireland would still be dominant, but perhaps not in that same way. You know, I think you would have a different style of rugby, and you know, ideally you'd have closer games as a result of it. But that's my thoughts on it. Let me know what you think. You can do that by getting in touch on Twitter. As I said, keen to hear your thoughts on everything, but yeah, let us know what you think with regards to that article and the thoughts of removing tactical substitutions. But that will be it for this week. Hopefully you've enjoyed listening to me for 40 odd minutes. Hopefully it hasn't been too tasking, but yeah, give us a shout, as I've said numerous times. Let us know what you want to hear from the show in the long run, because yeah, really keen to have a good refresh and kind of come back and essentially have a bit of a relaunch next season. But we will be here in the meantime, and we'll still be giving you regular weekly chats about rugby. And of course, we've got lots coming up. We've got that Osprey semi-final, the run-in in the league season, and then we've got Wales internationals when we get into the summer as well. So there will always be lots for us to talk about. And thank you to everyone who stuck with us over the years. It's been great having you on board. And thanks to everyone who's joined recently, whether you discovered us during the World Cup or the Six Nations or whatever. It's great to have you as a part of the attacking scrum. But that's it for this week. I'll be back to chat rugby with you, hopefully with someone else, very, very soon.
Podcast Network.